Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're tuned in to The Last Radio Show.
Hello and welcome to The Last Radio Show. I'm John Lynch.
I'm Jen Riley.
And this is the show where we talk about all kinds of stuff, news, history, pop culture, whatever we feel like. And this is going to be a little different than what we've done in other times. We are going to break this up into two parts.
Awesome.
I know it's a two-parter, so it's going to be, you know, we're going to have a to-be continued at the end of this.
Oh, cool. By the way, can I just say it's lovely to see you?
It's always lovely to see you. It's great to be together. It's always great to be together with you.
Yes.
So we are going to talk about a big subject, maybe the biggest pop star of all time, Mr. Michael Jackson.
King of pop. Did he name himself that?
I feel like he did, but he definitely was.
Right, of course.
Mean, it was a much deserved title, whether he did it himself or not.
Right.
It's, you know, he was the king of pop. And we are going to, of course, right now, the movie just came out, Michael, a couple of weeks ago, doing very well at the box office.
Yeah, are you going to see it?
I'm gonna wait till it's on Netflix or whenever it comes.
Yeah, exactly.
When it's on streaming, I don't feel the need to run out to the theaters and see it. I hear it's pretty good. We're gonna get into that a little later. Obviously, it's a little controversial because it doesn't really touch on a lot of stuff, which is controversial with Michael Jackson because his family produced it. So it's a very pro Michael piece as opposed to, you know, something that might be a little bit. And before we get into any of the nonsense later on, which is kind of going to be the second part, probably we're going to talk mostly about this. We should point out right at the top that he was never found guilty of anything in a court of law. He never did any of the things he was accused of over time.
I think we say alleged.
Alleged.
Right.
So definitely alleged, and a big case, you know, don't want to get sued. So make sure we put that out there. But Michael Jackson was born in Gary, Indiana in 1958. And a few years later, a very few years later, he joined his brothers and as part of the Jackson Five.
Right.
I mean, he was like 7 or 8, I think, when he joined the band and became the leader of the Jackson Five, essentially.
Yeah, he had the best voice.
Yeah, I feel like the other Jacksons, especially the other four of the original Jackson Five. I mean, obviously, Janet had a very, very successful career as well. But a lot of the other Jacksons were definitely a step down from Michael in terms of talent. And, of course, you know, he was the lead singer on most of the songs, ABC and, you know, all the classics. And they signed with Motown in 68 when he was 10 years old. And can you imagine that?
I have a 10-year-old. Can you imagine her?
Could you imagine? Exactly. Well, you would have to be more like Joe Jackson, his
dad,
you know, to really kind of drive. It was, of course, not the greatest Joe Jackson. The dad, very infamous. And he basically, you know, drove his kids pretty hard to make sure that they took care of the family in terms of financial stuff. Joe Jackson managed the group during the early years. Like I said, they signed with Motown Records in 68. Michael was the lead singer of the group, and I Want You Back was their first major hit. You know, so many, you know, as we say these songs, I think we're going to be like, oh, yeah, that was a great song.
Right.
You know, you forget how many songs he had, you know, with the Jackson 5 and solo. I mean, just an incredible catalog.
Incredible. I loved Michael Jackson, by the way, when I was a kid. Like, loved, loved. I would have, like, gone across the world to see him.
Now, of course, you know, very early on became kind of a teen heartthrob. You know, this was in the late 60s, early 70s. Through the 70s, there was always comparisons with the Jacksons and the Osmonds.
Oh, yeah?
Because the Osmond family was very big at that time.
Family.
And, you know, so Donny Osmond and Michael Jackson were kind of compared to each other. And so that was kind of a little bit of a rivalry, of course. You know, they became so popular working with you know, everybody in Motown and, you know, just becoming one of the biggest bands going on. So as they're getting bigger and bigger and Michael is more and more the forefront, eventually he kind of sheds the brothers.
Right.
you know, after, you know, a lot of hits in the 70s and, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. In 1979, he put out his first solo album, Off the Wall.
Oh.
And this was huge. Quincy Jones produced it. Just a huge, huge album. And it's that's kind of the album that's forgotten, because the next one we're going to talk about, right, when we talk about his discography, was such a big deal. But Off the Wall was huge. It was a big, big, big hit. Shake Your Body Down to the Ground. That was the big hit from that. And that was kind of his first breakthrough solo hit. And, you know, there's so many great tracks on that album.
And the 70s was like disco, so it was like perfect.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah, it was perfect. Still kind of part of the disco thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's when he decided to break off with his brothers and go solo.
Right.
And when Michael Jackson went on his own, imagine having a career, a 10-year career at this point, still being really young, and all of a sudden, you know, having all these hit records, and then you're going to get even bigger.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Because he put out what is essentially the best-selling album of all time, and what has become a landmark album, and it's so much more than really just an album. He put out the Thriller album.
Mm-hmm.
This was incredible. In 1982, it came out, won like 8 Grammys.
Yeah.
It was Quincy Jones again produced it. You know, him and Quincy Jones, obviously magic when they were working together. This was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
I mean, more than anything, more than just a hit record, this was a cultural moment.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I had the album. Was that when he was in a white suit?
He's in the white suit. He's kind of laying down. Yeah. And I think when you opened it up, there was like a tiger or something.
Yeah, there was a tiger. Yes, it was revealing of him laying with a tiger.
Yes,
I think.
Yes.
I might still have that. I got to check it out.
Yeah, it's legendary, of course. And, you know, so many insane amount of hits on this.
Yeah, that's the
thing. You know, you forget, like, oh, by the way, Paul McCartney was on that album doing The Girl Is Mine with him.
That was the same album.
Yeah. That was from that. And right at the same time, Paul McCartney put out an album with Say, Say, Say on it. That was him and Michael Jackson.
Yes, that was his album.
Yeah, that was Paul McCartney's album. So they did two songs together, each put one on an album. And right at the same time, they came out. And so, you know, it just, obviously, Thriller, the song Thriller.
Mm-hmm. And he had a Beatle on his album.
It was pretty cool. And there's some more stuff with the Beatles we'll get into with Michael Jackson a little later, a little bit of controversy. But it was kind of interesting. While he was working on that album, he like lived with Paul McCartney for a while.
Oh, really?
And, you know, again, there's a lot of weird stuff about Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney says it was like he was our kid. You know, he was like, you know, Paul, he was living with Paul and Linda McCartney at their house.
Oh, he must have been younger.
He was younger, he's like probably 20 years younger than Paul McCartney. And, you know, so, but obviously, the other thing about Michael Jackson at this time, 83 is when the album really took off. It came out late 82. MTV was just starting at that point. And he became their biggest artist.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, before Michael Jackson, MTV didn't play black artists.
Really?
It was just, very white, and it was kind of more of a rock channel.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if we think now, we're thinking back to the glory days of MTV, you think Michael Jackson, you think Madonna,
you think
a lot of pop stars,
Whitney Houston
absolutely, you know. But it was almost like a rock station, but with music videos. And, you know, so they were playing stuff like Rod Stewart and Pat Benatar and that kind of stuff that were hits. But Michael Jackson broke the color barrier on MTV, and he did it with the Billie Jean video.
Mm.
Remember, he's walking down the street and the lights lighting up.
Yeah, the lights going on.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Oh, I loved it.
It was just like insane.
Yeah.
And then Beat It.
Beat It, yeah.
Beat It, which was even bigger than Billie Jean. It was Eddie Van Halen played on that. He was the guitarist on that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he'd bringing over a rock and roll guy and, you know, putting him on there. The video for that, of course, had all the dancing and stuff.
The
fight dancing. Yep. And apparently they were real Bloods and Crips from Los Angeles in that video. He brought them in, said, like, do a music video, and they actually, like, did it.
Did he have the red jacket on in that one?
That was the red jacket one, I think. With all the zippers.
Yeah.
And, of course, the white glove.
Mm-hmm.
The white glove with the one white glove with sparkles all over it that became kind of his signature. And, of course, he did the moonwalk.
Yes.
the moonwalk, which your husband can do, if I remember correctly. Didn't he moonwalk at your wedding? I seem to remember that.
I don't know. if he did, he hasn't done it in years.
it might hurt at this point. You know, you might be using muscles you haven't used in a while. But nobody could do that but Michael originally. And he did it at the Motown, I think it was the Motown anniversary concert. And, you know, it was a live event being broadcast.
Right.
And he just did this, and people lost their mind.
Yeah,
he's walking phenomenal. Backwards. Yeah. How's he doing that? You know, it's absolutely.
Wasn't there one video where he almost like does a?
That's like a yeah, lean. The lean forward. Yeah. That's his other famous thing. That's from the Smooth Criminal video, yes. Which was a few years later.
And did they really nail his sneakers to the ground?
Apparently, the other dancers they did because it's like a group of them that do it. But Michael could apparently do it.
Okay,
and again, very.
Really talented.
Yeah, just like you know, very, you know, you don't wouldn't think of him as athletic because he's a little person kind of, you know, but definitely, you know, very flexible, I guess.
Agile, for sure.
Agile, yes. And, you know, very graceful, obviously, and obviously a great singer. But again, Thriller.
Right. Well, the music video for Thriller was also like groundbreaking.
Legendary,
right?
Legendary. Yeah, it was
like
so
movies.
Long. Yeah, I mean the song itself is like 6 or 7 minutes long, but then the video was even longer because they had like it was a film.
Yeah, it was a film.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I believe Steven Spielberg produced it, if I'm not mistaken. And of course Vincent Price on it.
Vincent Price, I know we're just talking about that voice. That's the first time I ever really think I knew Vincent Price.
Yeah. You know, he was this legend of horror, but, you know, if you weren't old enough to remember him, you know, he was just kind of this creepy guy on the Thriller album, but so perfect in that.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and he does the evil laugh at the end of it. And then, you know, and then at the end of it, you know, you don't know if it was a dream or not.
Right.
And then Michael turns around, he's got the eyes.
The eyes, the green eyes. Oh, my God.
The possessed eyes.
So amazing.
You know. It just became, and I remember when it debuted. Do you remember Friday Night Videos? It was a TV show on NBC.
I think so.
And it debuted on that, and that was like everybody was watching that.
Really? Was it a 30? I feel like it was 30 minutes, the video.
I think.
Or something.
You know, I think
ridiculous.
There was like a making of and stuff like that.
They eventually cut it down to replay it on MTV.
Yeah. Because they couldn't.
Yeah.
It was just insane how, you know, how long and elaborate it was.
Yeah.
And again, this was in the very early days of music videos.
So what's wild is that, so he came from the Jackson 5. When he broke out, all of these people already knew him and wanted to partner up with him, right?
Yeah.
Like Paul McCartney, Vince, whoever, all of these infamous people that are.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I guess, helped him become the king of pop, right?
Absolutely,
he had such
good
backing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, friends with Diana Ross, of course, legendary that they were together. So around as Thriller became such a big thing, everybody was paying attention to him. We kind of got a glimpse into the strangeness of Michael Jackson.
Right.
Because say what you want about the guy, he was weird.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He was eccentric.
I still have a little allegiance to my childhood.
It's
like,
fair enough.
I had a crush on him, actually, when I was 8.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but no, he was weird. Right.
It was around this time we found out about Bubbles, his chimp. Remember Bubbles, the chimpanzee, who was like his best friend, and there was like, you know, hung out with him, and you know, he eventually bought Neverland Ranch, which was his own amusement park.
Yes, and he created the Pirates of the Caribbean in his backyard.
Yes.
I remember that. I don't know if it was true or not, but again, I was like, whoa.
Yep. And then he, you know, he partnered up with Disney and, you know, did the Moonwalker, what was it called, the Disney ride? Or the Disney movie.
Oh, the 3D movie.
Yeah, and
I forget what that was called. That was a good one.
And, you know, but he was like a part of that.
And he kept being the first of everything. Like that 3D movie was like legendary, you know, epic, the first to use all this technology. I mean, he was just always the first at the forefront of everything.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we've said this about other things. You know, this was before social media.
Mm.
This was, you only really heard about people on the evening news, maybe, if you know, that's
radio,
on the radio, you know, in the newspaper. You know, there used to be these things called newspapers, but, you know, or in magazines like People Magazine or Rolling Stone or whatever. And he, you know, he became, you know, he went viral before it was really possible to go viral.
Yeah.
And like you said, every kid loved him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the coolest. And, you know, people were dressing like him, wearing the one glove.
Oh, yeah. I had a mirror that I wanted so bad. It was a mirror with his face with a Thriller album cover on it. And I wanted it so bad. I forgot. And finally, like, my mom got it for me. And I was like, yes, I hung it in my room. It was like the best.
Do you still have it?
No, I should have kept it.
You should have kept it. It's probably, you could probably find it on eBay, but it probably cost you a fortune. Yeah, you might have to look that up. But, you know, he won a ton of Grammys, of course, for Thriller, and it became, you know, this cultural phenomenon. Then he had to follow it up.
Right.
You know, which is really, really tough to do. And he did a pretty good job because he put out the Bad album right after that.
Oh, that's right.
That was, you know, that was a pretty big, wasn't as big
wasn't
as Thriller.
As good.
You know, it was,
wasn't
quite as good, but, you know, of course, Bad, you know, was a big song and, you know, a great video for that, too. Remember, they were in the subway.
Yeah,
and they were dancing.
Yeah,
he had that, he wore all the black and like all the buckles on it.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember that.
And you know, when we talk about, you know, Bad, and when we talk about Beat It, you know, on the previous album, we do have to mention Weird Al Yankovic too.
Oh,
because
right.
he was a part of this.
Yeah.
You know, he really was. He did Eat It.
Yes.
You know, which Weird Al does an amazing job recreating the videos of people when he does the parodies of them, and. I mean, he had a lot of the same people who were in the Beat It video perform in the Eat It video.
Oh, really?
I remember that. And Michael Jackson was very cool about it.
Right.
He was very supportive, helpful, you know, and he goes, Weird Al, when you see interviews with him, he does say, like, some artists don't want to be parodied, you know, but he
was. Well, now they probably wouldn't want to be.
Yeah.
What was Bad's, the parody of Bad?
Bad was Fat.
Oh, that's right.
Because I'm fat.
Yeah,
I'm
really, that would really not fat. Go over well, right?
No, no, that was definitely not politically correct.
Yes.
I think he, like, blew up really big at the end of it. And, you know, it was just, so I think that's when he was in his food stage, Weird Al Yankovic, because it was Eat It, then Fat, you know. But it was, then he wrote a song that a lot of people didn't know he wrote, but became another big hit, was The Bartman, which was when The Simpsons became big. That was, Everybody Do The Bartman was a Michael Jackson song.
Really?
But Bart Simpson sang it.
That was not on my radar.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was, you know, he did a lot of things.
Did he appear in The Simpsons?
Yes, and we're going to get into that because I'm a big Simpsons guy,
yes. You're a Simpsons guy, yeah.
And that was a big deal at the time, but it was also kind of lends into some of the controversial stuff that we're going to talk about in part two.
Okay.
That's when we're going to sneak into the 90s.
Okay. So we're in Bad right now. Is that when his hair went on fire?
Right around, I think between Thriller and Bad is when he was doing the Pepsi commercial.
Yeah.
And there were pyrotechnics going off. And he also did reunite at this point with the Jacksons, and they wouldn't call themselves the Jackson 5 because I think another brother joined the band. So I think there were six of them at that point. I think there's a younger brother than Michael.
Mm.
So he just called them the Jacksons and they did the Victory Tour, which was huge.
Okay.
And so, and again, the father kind of pushed Michael to come back to the brothers because there was a lot of money to be made.
Yeah, of course, for everyone.
Absolutely. So, and he did a tour with them. So I think it was around the time that they did that, that he did the infamous Pepsi commercial and his hair went on fire.
Right.
And a lot of people do think that he might have become addicted to painkillers after that because it was, I mean, it was serious. You know, people made a lot of jokes about it at the time because it was like, oh, ha, 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 Michael Jackson, his hair went on fire.
Right.
But it was pretty serious.
Yeah, serious injury,
he could have been really, really injured. So let's talk a little bit about some of his couplings, his celebrity sightings, because, you know, he would go to award shows. He would bring people with him. Mm-hmm. Brooke Shields went to a couple of them. People always said that they were a couple, but probably not.
Yeah.
He showed up at one of the MTV Music Awards with Madonna.
Right.
He showed up with Macaulay Culkin one time, you know, which they became friends.
Yeah. And Macaulay Culkin still
defends him and says, you know, he's still, you know, respects him and considered him a friend and everything. But he did hang out with a lot of children.
Right.
And that spread a lot of rumors.
Yes. Now, don't you think, just being a devil's advocate, he didn't have a childhood. So he was probably, one part of
it. A lot of people do say that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, literally he called his home Neverland.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're a psychiatrist,
there's
material to work with.
Exactly.
Here.
I mean, if he's performing at 10 years old.
10 years old,
and
you know.
At that point, he must have been performing several years before that. Right. So
absolutely.
There's no childhood at all.
Yeah. And, just, you know, again, being driven so hard by his father.
Right.
And a lot of it, you know. know, it's always fashionable to blame the parents. But boy, in this case, I think it doesn't take a leap of logic to realize that it's the dad that is behind a lot of what's going on here.
Sure.
But yeah, he never had a childhood. So, you know, he basically lived his childhood as an adult.
Yes, right. And he had enough money to do it, right?
He had more than enough money.
He's probably like, what the heck?
And one of the things towards the end of the 80s that he did with the money, now when he was hanging out with Paul McCartney, you know, he all of a sudden started making this tons of money. Thriller was so big and everything, you know, he had all those things. He went to Paul McCartney and said, listen, you know, what do I do with my money?
Right.
You know, which, you know, obviously Paul McCartney is a person who you could talk to on that level because, you know, he was pretty successful too. And so Paul McCartney said, you should invest in music rights where you own the catalog of artists. And Paul McCartney, I think, owns Buddy Holly's catalog and things like that. And Michael Jackson said to Paul McCartney, he's like, oh, maybe I'll buy the Beatles songs. And Paul McCartney said, funny.
Yeah.
A few years later, after that conversation, the Beatles catalog went up for sale. Now, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, of course, wrote most of the Beatles songs.
Right.
But they didn't own the rights to the lyrics.
Yeah.
They sold them when they were very young. They didn't know what they were doing.
They were trying to get a
deal. Were just, you know, 19 years old and not, you know, not the Beatles yet. They were just the Beatles lowercase. And so they sold the rights and they came up for sale. And the story goes, the way Paul McCartney tells the story is whatever the number is of what it would cost, he had an idea in his head.
Right.
And he's I'm just going to make up numbers here and say, like, he said $50 million would cost on the rights. So what he did was he went to Yoko Ono, because John Lennon was dead at this point, of course. And he said, listen, let's buy it together. I think it's fair, you know, that, you know, John should have half of it and I should have half of it. And Yoko agreed with him on that. But Yoko said, you know what? And Yoko is a very smart businesswoman, so I'm not going to, you know, dispute her on this, but she said, let's not offer them 50. Let's lowball them. They're gonna want us to buy it because it's better for, you know,
and
everybody.
Who else
should buy it but Paul McCartney and Yoko Ono should own the Beatle music. And so they offered like $40 million. Mm-hmm. Paul thought it should be $50 million. Michael Jackson came in and bought it for like $100 million.
Right.
And just like kind of swooped in and brought it.
Mm.
And Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson were no longer friends after that.
You
know, and there was a lot of controversies going out because, without getting too much into the legalese, Michael Jackson owned the rights to the lyrics but didn't own the songs.
Oh.
So he couldn't license like the Beatle recordings.
So what would you do with the lyrics?
If somebody wanted to re-record it, or somebody wanted to, you know, use
with a different arrangement,
or a different artist, like if you were going to cover a Beatles song, you know, then he would get royalties on that.
Right.
He got royalties on the Beatles songs when they sold because he had the rights to the lyrics.
Oh, gosh.
But he did not own the Beatle recordings.
Okay.
It's a little confusing.
Right.
And so at one point he licensed. This was pretty famous. He licensed Nike to use the Beatles song Revolution in an ad. And Nike thought they had the rights to the Beatles recording.
Oh.
And put the Beatles song in it. And then they were sued by Yoko and Paul and everybody else because they're like, no. You know, you could get a sound-alike band to record it, but you cannot use the original Beatles recording of it.
Imagine that didn't go through the legal department before.
I know. It's you know, we're talking about billionaires with a lot of money and big companies. I mean, it's Nike. You know, you think somebody would have realized, like, hey, we should double check and make sure that, you know, we're cool with all this. So that's Michael in the 80s.
Right.
I mean, basically, he was the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
But as he started the 80s, you know, kind of coming out as a solo artist and winning Grammys left and right and putting out the biggest album in the world, doing the reunion with his brothers, doing Bad, you know, doing all this kind of stuff, making these. And in the National Enquirer, pretty much every day he was on the cover. All kinds of weird stories coming out that he slept in an oxygen tent and that he, you know.
He also started to make changes to his face. And
then that, you know, everybody's like, that starts in the 80s into the 90s, into the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, basically his nose underwent many changes.
Yes.
And his skin color underwent many changes. Mm-hmm. Now, he said at the time that it was a skin condition that he had.
Right.
But, It probably wasn't. He was probably bleaching his skin.
Something, right?
Yeah, clearly, if you look at a picture of him from 1979 and a picture of him in, 95,
right.
It doesn't even really look like the same person.
No,
it's amazing. The nose is, and I remember there was always rumors that he was trying to look like Diana Ross.
Because
he was fascinated by Diana Ross.
Right.
So his nose was modeled after Diana Ross's nose.
But didn't they say that something happened? He had too many surgeries and then
it collapsed.
Collapsed.
His nose collapsed and they had to rebuild his nose.
I don't know if any of that's true.
You don't know what's true.
Right.
I mean, so much of what we're going to talk about is rumors and hearsay.
Rumors. Right.
And you don't know what's... And probably, I would say there's definitely some weird and kooky stuff in there, but probably it's been multiplied by 1,000 when you get into it.
Right.
Yeah. There was always stories that he was big on prank phone calling people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was like his favorite thing. And he would randomly call up people and like famous people. Like he would call up Martin Scorsese and pretend he was a salesman or something.
Again, that's like something you do when you're a kid.
Yeah.
He was like, I missed out.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. He had a pretty good sense of humor from what everything I've read about him and heard about him and people who knew him said.
Right.
But, there was this strangeness.
Mm.
I remember there was a story that he basically paid a supermarket to let him go shopping, like when the store was closed.
Okay.
Because he'd never been to a supermarket.
Oh, okay.
And he just wanted to see what it was like to walk around and push your shopping cart to be a normal person. And,
sad.
There is a sadness to it.
Yeah, there is.
There really is. I mean, there's, whatever you think about the other allegations that we're going to get into in part two of this. There is a tragedy to him. I mean, he was the most successful person ever in pop music.
Right.
But also there is this really dark, sad side and underlying it all.
It's kind of like interesting to think of, what if he did have a normal childhood, like up until whatever, he was 18.
Right.
Would he still have the talent? He probably would.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if he would have started music when he was in his 20s, which is what a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would have been successful.
Sure.
Obviously, there's a lot of talent there, and he's got style and charisma and all this kind of stuff. But so that's where we're going to leave things off at part one. We're wrapping up the 80s.
Right. With that, I'll leave it with my crush.
Your crush.
I'm going to put my crush back in the 80s and move
absolutely.
On from there.
So he's kind of declined a little bit from his peak in the Thriller time, but still really big.
Yeah.
Still really beloved for the most part.
Sure.
But there's the inklings of the weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in next time. Same bat channel, same bat. We'll be back soon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to The Last Radio Show. If you like the show, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review on your favorite platform. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at The Last Radio Show. We will talk to you soon.
The Last Radio Show.
The Last Radio Show.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.